Today on Maine Calling, the butterflies of Maine and how to protect them. Bugs are not the most admired creatures, except when it comes to butterflies. These magical, fluttering insects are not only visually captivating, they are universal symbols of transformation and hope. And they even have evocative names like Juniper Hairstreak, Frigga Fritillary, Dreamy Dusky Wing. I'm Cindy Hahn. Join me for a conversation with two biologists who are experts in the Lepidoptera of Maine about the behavior and life cycle of butterflies, moths, and skippers. We'll learn how these winged wonders help the environment as both pollinators and prey, and why their numbers are declining across the globe. Some Maine species are disappearing faster than others. What can be done to help protect butterflies and bring them back from the brink? Maine Calling is coming right up.
Maine Calling is made possible in part by Maine Seacoast Mission, delivering health care, education, and support to islands and coastal Down East communities. Learn more at seacoastmission.org. And by Verrill, committed to delivering trusted legal services in Maine and throughout the Northeast for 163 years. Learn more at verrill-law.com.
This is Maine Calling. I'm Cindy Hahn. Who doesn't like butterflies? These winged wonders are a universal symbol of transformation and hope. And today we'll learn all about the butterflies of Maine, what is threatening their survival, and ways to protect them from those threats. My guests are both butterfly experts or lepidopterologists who co-directed the Maine Butterfly Survey. We have here Dr. Herb Wilson. He is Professor Emeritus of Biology at Colby College. And Dr. Philippe de Menardier, he is a wildlife biologist, and he is the supervisor of the Wildlife Diversity Section at the Maine Department of Inland Fisheries and Wildlife. They also co-authored the book, The Butterflies of Maine and the Canadian Maritime Provinces. Welcome to both of you. We invite you to join the conversation. Do you have a favorite butterfly? Or do you have any questions about how they behave or how to attract them to your backyard? Email us at talk@mainepublic.org. You can post a comment on social media or give us a call, 1-800-399-3566. And just a reminder, that is our Maine Calling phone number. It's different than the one for the Maine Public Membership Drive. The Maine Calling number again is 1-800-399-3566. And Herb Wilson, Professor Wilson, I will start with you. As everybody knows, butterflies are very easy creatures to love. They're pretty, they float and they fly around. But not everyone spends a lot of time studying them like you have. So I just wanted to hear your story. What led you to be so interested in butterflies?
I can go back to my childhood in North Carolina, and I remember one butterfly that really captured my fascination was the zebra swallowtail. They were just so beautiful and so dainty as they flew around, and I maintained an interest in butterflies, as well as lots of insects and birds and other animals, and all around naturalist. Anytime I would travel anywhere, I would always look around for butterflies, and there's quite a diversity across our continent, so it's always fun to see new ones. And I really developed a strong rekindled interest in butterflies about 1998, and I taught a couple of classes for Maine Audubon on butterflies, and that was great fun, learning more about them to teach and trying to get enthusiasm for butterflies among the students. And about that time, Philip and other people at the Maine Inland Fisheries and Wildlife were gearing up to do a butterfly survey. And I heard about that and I thought, I want to be in on that. And so I became one of the co-coordinators of the Maine Butterfly Survey. And that occupied us with about 15 years of field work. So I spent a lot of time chasing butterflies and photographing butterflies, and that passion has not diminished in the least.
I'm glad you mentioned Philip's work with you. The two of you have teamed up for quite a while in this interest. So Philip, it's your turn to tell us about your butterfly origin story, how you got so into this study.
Yeah, thank you, Cindy. Thanks for having us on your show today. The I'm really honestly have a little bit of a different story than Herb in that I came quite late in my career to butterflies and frankly to insects in general. I was trained as more of a traditional wildlife biologist, but I've always been interested in all things wild and especially winged and wild. And so dragonflies, damselflies, butterflies, bats, and birds have always fascinated me. And yeah, so, it probably comes as a surprise to a lot of audience members that the Maine Department of Inland Fisheries and Wildlife would sponsor and champion a butterfly atlas. But there's also, it's important to keep in mind that we're actually mandated to by the legislature in Maine to conserve all species of wildlife in the state, and that is broadly defined in Maine to include invertebrates. So we, we've been tack it's a, also sort of an intimidating exercise because there's so many invertebrates and insects, but we've been slowly over the past 30 years tackling one group after another, and I was very pleased to be part of the butterfly effort.
Well, like you said, it's quite a job. I read that there are at least 120 butterfly species. So, tell us a little more about that Maine butterfly survey and how you documented what we have here and what it records.
Sure. So, yeah, we launched, I think officially launched the Butterfly Atlas in Maine in like 2006, 2007, and it ran for officially 10 years. But like Herb said, we collected data before and after, but the official period was about 10 years. And, we honestly only intended that to be a 5-year effort, but once we had so many trained amateur naturalists helping us out, it was really hard to turn off the faucet. And we kept the project going for a full 10 years. And I'm glad we did because we really have collected a comprehensive data set. There were other components in addition to citizen scientists. We had some professional targeted surveys, and we really made an effort to comb through all of the historical knowledge on butterflies. There's been 150 years of study of butterflies in Maine. And so there's literature, scientific literature, old books and museum records and private collections, all of which we did our very best to collect. So we feel like we have a comprehensive view now of both the historical and modern butterfly fauna in Maine.
It
And Herb,
was
go
an
ahead.
ambitious an ambitious effort because what we were trying to do is to map the distribution of our butterflies at the township level. And as people know, there are 711 townships in the state of Maine. So that was indeed a very lofty goal. Of course, we weren't able to sample all of the townships, but most of them. So, but the level at which we know the distribution of our butterflies is pretty amazing. And over the course of the Maine Butterfly Survey, our citizen scientists photographed or collected over 30,000 records of Maine butterflies. It's a tremendous effort.
That's what I was going to ask you about, to just paint a picture of what this actually meant. People had to find as many different species of butterflies as they could and then document them, take pictures, or what did they have to do?
Yeah, we use what we call a voucher system, which is to say that if you went out and you saw a tiger swallowtail, we weren't going to necessarily believe you, that we hope that you were right, that you needed to provide evidence. And there were three ways to produce evidence. One was to take a photograph that was good enough to be able to identify it to species. Two was to collect a specimen, in which case it went to a museum. Or third was to find a roadkill specimen. So we knew it was around in the area, but no longer living. But all three of those were vouchers that we would use to accept a record into the database.
And Herb, I know that you're someone who just, whenever you can, goes around looking for butterflies anyway, regardless of the survey, right? So, how do you do that? You just go hunting in groves or climbing over ravines and looking for the spots where you know they are?
Yeah, these days, what I'm generally looking for are species that are unusual or rare, and in some cases looking for species that haven't occurred in Maine yet, but we think that they might. So we just as an example, we knew that there's a type of butterfly called a skipper, a Zabulon skipper, that had been pushing north up into New Hampshire now, and we knew the type of habitat that it found. And what I did 2 summers ago was to go down to extreme southern Maine and look along power line rights of way, and lo and behold, I did find the Zabulon skipper. So it was the first record for the state. But we're also looking for rare species and seeing how they're doing, and also trying to document their northern expansion as climate change occurs. So it's every species has a little bit of different biology, and so knowing what they are, what those differences are, guides me into going out and looking for particular species.
And I'll go to Philip in a moment, but just to follow up on that, Herb, do you carry a net around, or do you put them in a jar? What do you do with them when you find one?
Almost always, I'm photographing these days. So yes, I have an appendage around my neck, which is a camera.
Okay, but in general, if others are doing this, you would recommend not touching the butterfly or not netting them.
I mean, you can net a butterfly safely, and it's easy to handle them. Their wings are actually pretty tough, but I prefer just watching them through binoculars or taking a photograph.
So, Philip, that's what it sounds like. There's almost an whole hobby, very much like birding, to go butterflying. Is there a such a thing? Is there a term for that?
Yeah, there is actually. We kind of call it watchable wildlife. And, I would say that, of course, birds are the champion of that group. And there's a tremendous amount of actually ecotourism coming to Maine just to see our incredible bird fauna. But increasingly, birders are using their binoculars, like Herb said, to train on other things that are flying around. There's been a huge advent of field guides to butterflies and dragonflies and other colorful winged insects that really have made them much more accessible to the public for identification and viewing. I might just say that the sort of unique niche that our butterfly atlas and book I feel fills is that it's not a field guide. We never really intended it to be. There's lots of field guides out there that just basically tell you how to identify the species. Our book is more once you come back to your home and you think you know what it is, but you want to learn a whole lot more about it. We have in-depth accounts on their life history, their host plants, their flight, and biology. And so it's an opportunity to learn a lot more. And it's pretty neat. It's actually what one of the things that hooked me with butterflies is that, I mean, they're such tiny, delicate creatures, but they have this really large story to tell once you dive into one species after another and learn about their unique habitat and biology and evolutionary adaptations.
Well, can you go into a very basic lesson for us for those? I think most people know how they metamorphosize, they're the symbols of transformation, but take us through that sort of step of their life cycle.
Yeah, they have what we call complete metamorphosis. So they actually have 4 stages to their full life cycle. Eggs, which are laid on usually host plants or near specific plants that are then fed upon by caterpillars that hatch out of the eggs. And that caterpillar, or sometimes referred to as larval stage, will then, after several weeks of growth, they will pupate or turn into what some people refer to as a chrysalis. And after that sort of quiescent period, they will actually transform seemingly magically into an entirely different, morphological beast, the winged butterfly that we're most familiar with. But and that winged adult is usually very often just has a life span of a few weeks, maybe a month or two. The monarch being a prime exception to that, that hopefully we can talk more about later. But the we think about, okay, like right now, the early in the spring, probably very few of us have seen an adult butterfly even yet. And yet the components of their life cycle are out there all four seasons, all the time, right? It just depends on which stage they're in at that moment.
Right. So the seasons, we'll talk more about the timing of when to expect, you know, which butterflies in Maine, but we do need to take a quick break right now. We'll come back to talk more about butterflies and learn from our experts. This is Maine Calling. We'll be back soon.
Hi, welcome back. I'm Scott Marshallton here with Susan Sharon. Just for a few minutes to remind you, today is our Here for Maine fundraising drive, where we ask you, our listeners, to call in and share your support. Be as generous as you can be. 1-800-866-1475 is the number you can call to share your donation with Maine Public Radio right now. Listening to Butterflies on Maine Public, Maine Calling on Maine Public. And, you know, we were talking off air. It's starting to happen in Maine. Maybe we're getting a spring.
Yeah, I haven't seen any butterflies.
No, I haven't either.
But you've seen the hummingbirds.
I've seen the hummingbirds coming back, thankfully.
Tiny, delicate creatures with a huge story to tell. That's what they're saying on Maine Calling. And, you know, you never know what topics. The topics are so diverse on Maine Calling. And this is why you're listening right now to this program. It's informative, educational conversations with actual experts. And you get a chance to engage with the program yourself, whether you call in or you joined by social media. That's a cool thing, and it's unusual, and it's why it's so important to support this service at 1-800-866-1475.
Or you can go online at mainepublic.org. And, you know, it's just ironic that here Susan Sharon and I are chatting off air about what's going on, listening to Maine Calling. That is exactly the intent. That's the purpose of Maine Calling statewide and the statewide network that Maine Public has. It's to engage in these conversations, to talk to our neighbors, to talk to our friends, to talk to our colleagues about what we're seeing going on in nature. It could be what's going on in politics. Lots to talk about there, Susan. We won't do that for this pledge pitch.
That's right. Well, that's a little bit too long.
We'll
for a
save that.
Break.
that's a whole program on that. But it's your support. It's our listener supported. You hear it on air all the time. Supported by you, listener supported. You, our audience members, make up that support when you call 1-800-866-1475. Or when you go online, join Maggie in Scarborough. Maggie increasing her current sustaining pledge, an evergreen friend. Thank you, Maggie, for that. Susan Walker of Freiburg also increasing her sustaining pledge, evergreen friend, making an additional gift. We've got a lot of folks that are doing that these days, Susan. We appreciate and we thank you for that.
That's right. And this is, as you said, it's listener-supported radio by you, for you. And that's a cool model, and it's been working for a long time, but it's more important than ever right now to keep the service independent, to keep it thriving and expanding. We've
that's
expanded,
right.
Scott, in the last year.
We absolutely have, and we've got more signals. We've got some increased journalism. We had an amazing effort with Frontline, Susan, that you were a huge part of. Right now, won't you join that caller? 800-866-1475. When you donate right now, any amount, you'll be entered to win one of five round-trip ferry passes from Bar Harbor to Yarmouth, Nova Scotia, courtesy of Bay Ferries, operators of the CAT. I'm assuming Canada is still letting us into their country, Susan.
Well, yeah, hopefully. We'll find out.
We hope. No, we have a fantastic relationship with our Canadian friends, with our neighbors here in Maine, and we all know that. But it's your support that matters at 1-800-866-1475.
You know, we say it often, but listener donations make up the largest and most reliable source of Maine Public Radio's funding. 75% comes from listeners just like you, and that's why it's important to hear from you today to keep the service thriving and growing, and to keep it independent in these turbulent times. Please make your donation by calling 1-800-866-1475, and thank you.
Thanks so much.
Welcome back. This is Maine Calling. I'm Cindy Hahn. The order Lepidoptera includes butterflies, moths, and skippers. We're learning about these winged insects and what to know about their biology and behavior and their outlook in the face of widespread decline. An additional note, a PBS film premieres tonight on Maine Public Television. It's called Bugs That Rule the World, and it highlights the diversity of insects and why they're vulnerable, including butterflies. My guests today are both butterfly experts. Philip DeMenardier is a wildlife biologist with the Maine Department of Inland Fisheries and Wildlife. And Herb Wilson is a Colby College Professor Emeritus of Biology. They co-directed the Maine Butterfly Survey, and they were both authors of the guide, The Butterflies of Maine and the Canadian Maritime Provinces. share your comments and questions. What do butterflies mean to you? Tell us your butterfly stories and encounters. Email talk@mainpublic.org, comment on our Facebook page or Instagram, or give us a call, 1-800-399-3566. That is 1-800-399-3566. And Herb, let's pick up on where we were talking about the life cycle of the butterfly, and just what can people expect this time of year, and when does what happen in a butterfly's life cycle?
That's a great question. And as Philip said, there really are two distinct animals almost in a butterfly life cycle, herbivorous caterpillars and then nectar sipping adults. And as it turns out, one of these life stages is very picky and one is not. The picky one is the caterpillar, because they are feeding on leaves voraciously, but leaves, of course, don't want to be nibbled on, and so they often protect themselves chemically, so they produce compounds that are noxious. Well, caterpillars have the potential to develop ways to combat these defensive chemicals, but every plant has different defensive chemicals. So one caterpillar mechanism to detoxify a particular chemical is only going to work on a particular plant. So caterpillars are going to be found associated with a single plant species. On the other hand, the adults are happy to take sugar water anywhere. They love nectar, and they'll forage on any kind of flower. But mom has to be able to find the plant on which to lay her eggs that the caterpillar is going to gobble up once it hatches out from the egg. So the phenology or the timing of development of these plants is critical. So early in the spring, you're not going to expect to find butterflies around that are unable to find the plant on which they need to lay their eggs. So that's a trick to trying to find butterflies. If you want to find, say, Harris's checker spot, then what you need to do is to find some flat-topped aster, because that's where the female is going to lay her eggs, and that's the plant that the caterpillar is going to be eating. The adults can be found anywhere as long as there's nectar around, but mom is always going to, at some point, has to come to that flat top aster. You want to see a bog copper? You go to the bog and you find cranberries. So knowing a little bit about the life cycle is critical when you're trying to see a particular species of butterfly, and it also determines in large part the timing of their flight season. As our book showed, there are some species that fly through most of the summer. There are others that are only found in the fall. There are others that are early spring.
So very specific, species by species, the habitat, the food, everything.
Absolutely.
That's really something. Let's go to a call now. This is Lee calling us from Skowhegan. Hi, Lee. Go ahead.
Hello. What an interesting show. I remember the early signs of spring were always those little blue azure butterflies. But I had a question about butterflies that hibernate. I think there are a couple of types of butterflies that hibernate in Maine and come out in the early spring. Wouldn't that make them the longest-lived ones?
Thanks for that question, Lee. I was going to ask Philip, some leave Maine and some stay for the year, right? How does that all work?
Yeah, and so thank you for that question. It's absolutely true that butterflies have different strategies for overwintering. Of course, winter is a really difficult period for insects to survive, and most of them overwinter in some one of those other stages we talked about, either as an egg or as a caterpillar or as a chrysalis. But there is, like the caller mentioned, a handful of species that overwinter as adults in Maine, probably about a half dozen or so species. This is the mourning cloak and species of comma, of which we have four or five species of commas, tortoise shells, two species of tortoise shell. So those are the individual, those are the species you're going to expect to see very early in the season, precisely because they don't have to transform. They're already adults and they're, you know, spending the winter under sloughing bark or in woodsheds, wood piles, rock piles, places where they can take shelter. But on those first warm spring days, they will emerge and you'll see them flooding about. And you might ask what they're feeding on, which is a good question, because there isn't much nectar super early in the spring. These overwintering species that overwinter as adults also happen to be, have adapted the ability to feed on other things like sap on trees or carrion, damp earth, and other things that they can get nutrition from, because there just aren't many flowers out first thing in the spring.
Thanks for your call, Lee. And we're getting lots of questions about good butterfly habitat. So before we go to those, I want to address the big issue, which is that there are very many threats to butterflies, and this is causing a great deal of decline here in Maine and across the globe. So Herb, tell us about this big trend that we're seeing and why Maine is having problems with particular species.
Well, yeah, I don't think Maine is unusual in that the declines that we see in North American butterflies are pretty broad. But just to tell you a little bit about the data, the North American Butterfly Association since 1993 has been conducting butterfly censuses. There are 450 of these sites that have been done. And about 3 years ago, someone analyzed the data from all these censuses over the last 30 years or so. And they found that particularly the Southwest was showing tremendous declines in their butterflies, that the Northeast and Eastern areas and Southeastern areas of the country were holding their own, perhaps even some were increasing. But recently, and just this year, a different study was done, which we call a meta-analysis. So these people took not only the data from the NABA censuses, but also lots of other sources of information. So it's sort of a meta-analysis is sort of an analysis of many analyses at once. And it was absolutely horrifying what they found, which is that since 2000, over the last 20 years, 2000 to 2020, there's been a 22% decline in North American butterflies. And it's not just one or two species, it's the vast majority of them. And so that's been a real concern. And of course, the reasons for these declines are myriad. We have conservation, we have lack of conservation areas, we have pollution, there's development, all kinds of ways that pesticides, all kinds of ways that butterflies suffer. But we know that there are these declines. And again, some of these declines are occurring in the state of Maine.
And so of those, I'll turn to Philip again for this, of those threats that you mentioned, things like habitat loss and pesticides and I guess climate change too. I don't know if that's clearly part of it. What are the ones where we can do something about it, Philip?
Yeah, there are a lot of issues that butterflies and other pollinating insects face in Maine. And Herb's listed them, and you're absolutely right that climate change is another. It's sort of this big elephant in the room that we're still struggling to understand what the implications will be. But if I had to estimate what I feel like there's really one of the most pressing threats in Maine, it would be habitat loss. Because, you know, you can scale back on your pesticide use, you can reduce pollution, you can pass regulations to increase protections. You can, preventing the spread of invasive plants through preventing the sale of such species. But it's really once habitat's been converted to pavement or a subdivision or a parking lot or a trailer park, it pretty much is going to be that way till the next glacier comes thousands of years hence. So it's a permanent loss of habitat. And we know that we're losing thousands of acres to permanent conversion of habitat in Maine every year. Unfortunately, most of that is occurring in southern Maine. And while we tend to think of northern Maine as the wilderness that's intact and that will support all of our wildlife, we actually have the highest richness of butterflies in southern and coastal Maine. And that's true for most of the biodiversity in Maine. The richness across groups tends to be highest in southern Maine. But that's exactly where we have our highest human population densities, greatest rate of habitat conversion, and least amount of conservation land. So it's a difficult nexus of issues, and we're trying to address it. You know, one of the really tangible conservation products of our Butterfly Atlas efforts is that we're able to get a really good handle on the status, not just the distribution in biology, but the actual conservation status of species in Maine. And so of the 120 species we now officially list, about 20 of them as either endangered, state threatened, or state special concern, the latter being kind of a watch list, candidate list for endangered and threatened. And so now with that information, we can really target our limited dollars and staff capacity and conservation resources to those species most in need. And very often, as I said, those are in southern Maine.
Are there one or two that you could just mention that are the most endangered?
Yeah, one that's really exquisitely beautiful and fascinating to learn about is the Hessel's hair streak. It is, as Herb said, one of these extreme specialists that only feeds on a single host plant, that being Atlantic white cedar, which itself is a rare tree in southern Maine and actually part of a rare natural community all throughout its range on the East Coast. And so this is not northern white cedar, which people might think that is, you know, not so uncommon. But the Atlantic white cedar is not even a cedar. It's actually a cypress. And that little tiny emerald green butterfly, it's about the size of your thumbnail, if that, and has tiny little hair streaks, tail protuberances off the hind wing. It's bejeweled in emerald green. And yet it's very difficult to see amongst the Atlantic white cedar green foliage. But if you want to find that species, you really need to go to one of the few remaining Atlantic white cedar swamps in southern Maine. And while the swamp itself isn't particularly developable, the margins of it are. And unless you can maintain intact riparian sort of buffered habitat around those swamps, it'll be difficult to preserve the actual population of butterflies there.
Well, like I said, lots of folks here weighing in about trying to make their own backyards better habitats for butterflies. So I'll read this email from Dewey. A few years ago, I got our yard designated as an official monarch way station, primarily because of the abundance of milkweed in our yard. The program is administered by the University of Kansas, and you can find information at monarchwatch.org. In addition to monarchs, we also regularly see at our yard in Nobleboro great spangled fritillaries, swallowtails, and skippers. They particularly like our coneflowers, goldenrod, and asters. And I know we also have a call coming in to ask what other types of native plants we can add to our gardens to increase butterfly habitat, but we'll get to that after this break. We're just going to step away for a few minutes, and then we will be back. This is Maine Calling.
And good morning. You're listening to a discussion about butterflies like the Hessel's hair streak, that only eats a rare plant. This is like a great, beautiful discussion about butterflies this morning on Maine Calling. It's our spring fundraiser, and we're listening to this live. I'm Susan Sharon, here with my colleague Scott Marshallden, asking you to take a moment just now to do the business of public radio by calling 1-800-866-1475, keeping these kinds of conversations going over the next year at such an important time, Scott.
It certainly is. Again, 1-800-866-1475. You can go online at mainepublic.org and be as generous as you can be when you share your donation with Maine Public Radio. And really interesting conversation today. And spring is starting to happen here in Maine and Canada and other places. And it's really your support that supports programs just like this. We talk about it all the time, listener support. And that's really important here for Maine Public Radio.
It's an unusual model. It's been going on for decades, and for some magical reason, it continues to work because of you. You make it happen. It's public radio for and by you. 1-800-866-1475. You know, Maine Calling, today it's about butterflies. Yesterday it was about the Shakers. In the past week, we've heard about topics like noise pollution. We've had the Political Pulse team on to talk about everything going on up at the State House and beyond in politics. Canada and Maine relations, another important topic, libraries. You just, every day, it opens the world. And that's the whole point of the show that's been going on for a dozen years now, Scott.
It certainly does. And that's allowed because when you call in at 1-800-866-1475 and sharing your support with Maine Public today, that is what your fund. And you're funding programmings like this, like Maine Calling. And I'll highlight, because sometimes we miss Maine Calling. I don't often get a chance to listen during live time at 11. But we also have a rebroadcast at 7 o'clock. And also we have podcast, which is very important. It's the way I listen to most of my Maine Calling shows. And that one that was on U.S. and Canadian relations, very good programming and a very good perspective that we all should have today during drives like this when we think about what's going on out there in the world. It's your support, though, that matters at 1-800-866-1475. And Susan, we were talking off air about some of the stories that the news team has been tracking down. And there's a lot of heavy things going on.
It is.
A lot of things to follow, a lot of things to digest. And I just commend you and our news team for doing the good work. And as a reminder, it's our people that are calling in today that are supporting that. So not only do we thank you, our news team, but we thank the callers that are making that possible.
We thank you for listening. We thank you for supporting the service. We thank you for recognizing why it sounds different and how that happens. And it's because of you, because you make the pledges today that fund the future programs like Maine Calling or the next show or the next project for the news team. 1-800-866-1475 or go online at mainepublic.org. We've got some really lovely volunteers standing by to take your call, and it only takes a second. And Scott, maybe you want to increase your sustaining membership.
We've had so many folks calling in over the course of the week and during the pre-drive, that folks who are Evergreen friends. 56% of all of our households that support Maine Public are an Evergreen friend, a monthly sustaining donor. And we have lists of thank you names to shout out, and almost every one of them on my list right here is a sustaining member, an Evergreen friend who's increased their giving. We can't really thank you enough for doing that. It's really important for us as a station. So again, won't you join them when you call 1-800-866-1475, and thanks.
Thank you.
Welcome back. This is Maine Calling, and I'm Cindy Hahn, and you're listening to a show about butterflies today. We're talking about butterflies, moths, and skippers, and what to know about these eye-catching winged insects and the place they hold in our culture and the environment. Joining me are Herb Wilson and Philip DeMinardier. He is the both of them are biologists, and they both co-directed the Maine Butterfly Survey, as well as helping to write a guide about the butterflies of Maine. Join our conversation. Call 1-800-399-3566. Send a brief email to talk@mainepublic.org or post to our Facebook page or to Instagram. Again, the number for Maine Calling, 1-800-399-3566. We will go to a caller now. This is Terry calling from Waterville. Hi, Terry. What did you want to know?
So you kind of stole my thunder, but I have milkweed down. I have flat aster. I'm about to plant flowers. And so any other flowers that help butterflies in general?
Oh, boy. I bet there's a long list that you could recommend. Herb, you want to start?
Joe pieweed is excellent. Goldenrod is excellent. Just about any composite plant. So black-eyed Susan, those are all really good. Echinacea, things like that. And since butterflies have a long proboscis, then they can feed on lots of plant flowers that other pollinators and nectar feeders can't. So things like mints, digitalis, those are great. Basically, any native plant can go in your yard and it will attract butterflies.
And that speaks to also when you mentioned the threats, invasive species are another threat to butterfly habitat, right, Philip? They're squeezing out or they're displacing the native species?
Yeah, invasive plants primarily are a threat, especially in wetland settings. For example, we have it's actually an endemic subspecies of butterfly here in Maine, meaning it's got extremely narrow range, only occurs in Maine and New Brunswick. It's the Clayton's copper butterfly, and it occurs in these enriched fens, bog-like habitats in northern Maine and eastern Maine. And there's a couple of sites where Phragmites is now impinging on those populations and shading out and crowding out their host plant, which is shrubby cinquefoil. But yeah, other invasive glossy buckthorn, common reed, or purple loosestrife can all become sort of a Japanese knotweed, can form these monocultures that really outcompete and decrease the diversity of understory plants that can support, of course, a wider diversity of butterflies.
Well, great. And thanks for that call, Terry. Boy, between the plant names and the butterfly names, we got all kinds of fun stuff going on here. we have a question from Chris. How detrimental is mowing fields and meadows during the growing season to butterflies and other invertebrates? And so the whole movement to No Mow Maine and all these efforts to reduce lawn mowing. Oh, go ahead, Philip. What would you say to that?
Yeah, absolutely. That's a great question. I'm glad it was asked because I might have forgotten to mention it. But that is, you know, one of the ways that listeners can really help is just by managing their own back, not just their little backyard and gardens, but the fields around their home, if they should own some, in a manner that's more conducive to butterflies and other pollinators. And one of the very basic, simple things you can do is just mow less and mow late. And, you know, less frequently, let things get a little higher, both in your backyard, you know, let the dandelions and violets and asters sort of poke ahead of their heads above the grass for a little while before you mow it. And then in those fields and meadows and pastures and orchards around your home, just let a greater diversity of perennial wildflowers occur. And if, of course, that's easier said than done for in a more commercial or agricultural setting. But even in those settings, you know, where hay fields are being managed, if just a few meters, you know, of habitat could be feathered on the edge of those fields between the forest edge and the crop production or the hay production area, that transition zone, that ecotone of a few meters where you let material grow much higher and more in a more diverse composition, that can be tremendously valuable. And yet you're not succumbing to woody succession because you can brush hog those areas once or twice a year, you know, late in the season, and have that nice transition zone that's attractive to pollinators.
Okay, and one more question on this topic. This is an email from Rob. We are setting up our gardens for butterflies, including native host caterpillars and nectar plants for local species. I am wondering if your guests can comment on the importance of selecting plants for gardens that do not contain neonics and that can be harmful to butterflies and most pollinators. Herb, did you want to take that one?
I will. Yeah, that one of the great concerns about butterfly declines and pollinator declines, of course, is the pesticides. And of course, we all know the horror story of DDT and how that had such devastating effects on all kinds of organisms. But currently many people are using these neonicotinoids, and which seem to be a little more environmentally friendly, but we're now learning more about the fact that they do have deleterious effects. So trying to minimize the amount of pesticides that are introduced into your yard is a desirable trait to me. So trying to find neonic-free plants, that's a very important thing to do.
Okay. I wanted to get to this question before we run out of time, because, Philip, I understand you were involved with picking our state or getting a state butterfly. We have a state cat, we have a state dessert, but we didn't have a state butterfly until recently. So how did you get involved with that, and what ended up happening?
Yeah, thank you. I have to give the credit for that to the students of Old Orchard Beach Middle School, where there was a science class of in which they took it upon themselves to do just that, to identify and nominate a state butterfly. And they brought it all the way forward to the legislature, and it was unanimously approved and voted on. I will say that I did, you know, I played a small role in that the students had initially selected a species that actually it was the Hessel's hair streak, which would be very difficult as in many regards as a state butterfly, because honestly, almost nobody besides Herb and myself and maybe a few other people that you can count on one hand have ever seen that species or ever will. So we encouraged them to select a species that might be a little more accessible and widespread in the state. And yeah, they and we gave them a few choices that would probably be good candidates. And they selected ultimately the pink-edged sulfur, which is a beautiful little yellow butterfly with some pink highlights underneath its wing. And what's kind of neat and very appropriate about the pink-edged sulfur is that its host plant is the Maine state fruit, blueberry. So they feed on lowbush blueberry, and that's obviously a fairly iconic symbol for Maine as well.
That's wonderful. So that's a good trivia question to know. It's the pink-edged sulfur, right? That's great.
That's right.
Real quick, let's see. There's a note here from Debbie, who was driving, Debbie from Buxton. She wanted to know about Luna moths and why they can be harder to find. And Herb, we've barely talked about moths and skippers as being in the same general order as butterflies. Briefly, what's the difference between a butterfly and a moth?
Okay. Well, butterflies are easy to describe, that they are a scientifically defensible group. And one characteristic that they all have is that they have antennae that have a little club at the end. It's a swelling. So clubbed antennae, that's characteristic of butterflies. Skippers are a type of butterfly, but they have an interesting antenna in that it not only has a club, but it also is curved. So it's almost like a shepherd's crook. But then we have the moths, and the moths are really an artificial group. It's basically any lepidopteran that isn't a butterfly. So it's hard to give a specific definition of what a moth is, other than it is a lepidopteran that's not a butterfly. But they never have antennae that are clubbed. Some of them are straight. Some of them are tree-like, arborescent. And of course, moths tend to be more nocturnal, but not always. So moths is a term of convenience, but as a scientific term, it really is not, it can't be justified. But it's a very useful term because we know what moths are, even though it doesn't have a scientific definition of what a moth is.
Okay, and gosh, we're almost out of time, but she asked about Luna moths. Do we have Luna moths?
We do have Luna moths, and I just happen to cross them every now and then, so I don't really know a place where you could go to see them, and I don't really have any good firm basis of what their population dynamics are like, whether they are doing well or doing poorly. I just don't know.
Okay, great. Well, unfortunately, that's all the time we have. It's so many more questions for both of you, and so did our audience. But thank you both for joining us today. Dr. Philippe Dimay-Nadier, sorry about that, supervises the Wildlife Diversity Section at the Maine Department of Inland Fisheries and Wildlife. And Dr. Herb Wilson is Professor Emeritus of Biology at Colby College. Their recent book is The Butterflies of Maine and the Canadian Maritime Provinces. Today's sound engineer was Jane Donahue. Visit mainecalling.org to find links to our past shows and to subscribe to Maine Calling's weekly newsletter. I'm Cindy Hahn, and you've been listening to Maine Calling on Maine Public Radio.
Hi, I'm Scott Marshall, and back with Susan Sharon just for a few more minutes to remind you about our Here for Maine fundraising drive. We talk a lot about, quote, listener support. It's supported by listeners, and that is what we're doing here today. The business of Maine Public Radio is to ask you for your support during drives like this. Won't you share your philanthropy with us at 1-800-866-1475? Now, we've had a lot of folks calling in, talking to our volunteers, asking about the threat to federal funding, and want to be clear about some of that. So let me address that for us. The threat to federal funding for public broadcasting has been heavily in the news this past week, and that is a very real challenge for stations like ours at Maine Public, but that is absolutely not why we are here today. Today was our normal fundraising drive week for Maine Public, our Here For Now drive, so we'd be doing that anyway, so it's not mixed with this threat to federal funding. The programming that we're supporting today is news, favorite shows, classical music, educational programming for the kids across our state. That's what today's drive Here For Maine is all about. If you want to help, and we've had a lot of people asking us how they can help advocate for Maine Public, go to protectmypublicmedia.org. Again, that's protectmypublicmedia.org. It's a group that we're working with, that other stations are working with, and you can share your advocacy there and get your voice heard in Washington. But that is not why we are here today. We are here today to ask for your programming support. Right, Susan?
That is right. Thanks for that, Scott. Yeah, we have been listening to Maine Calling on Maine Public Radio. And today, it was all about butterflies. I just like to reference the programming because I learned things. You know, every time I listen to Maine Calling or to many of our shows, it's like going to the library. You know, you want to go look something up or you got to go. You know, for me, I'm dedicated to more butterfly-friendly plants in my yard. But we learned about the state butterfly, the pink-edged sulfur, and that there are 120 species. And I'm saying this because this is the kind of programming you expect on Maine Public Radio. And we're funded by an original model. It's by you. The programming is for you and by you, and it happens because of you. The seeds that you plant today with your donation in this spring fundraiser are what will fuel the future butterfly programs of Maine Public. 1-800-866-1475.
I'll say it again, 1-800-866-1475 or online at Maine Public. I've never seen any, well, I shouldn't say that. Susan, you are a journalist. You took a lot of notes during that Maine Calling.
I always do.
As you always do, as a fantastic journalist does. And I just thought to myself, I'll podcast that later to pick up some of whatever I'm missing that Susan is writing down. But that's the nature of Maine Calling, statewide call-in program about different topics. I frankly am always amazed they go from today's topic, butterflies, to a heavier topic about politics in Maine,
right,
to other issues that are going on, book reviews, conversations with authors, and Maine as an audience, just you call in, you participate, and that's what this programming is all about. Made possible with your support.
That's right. I love it because it's engagement. You know, I think it's just really cool when people are engaged about anything. And so this program is all about that. It could be a straight interview program like On Point, which is also fantastic, but it's not. It gives you a chance to call in, ask a question, make a comment. You can do it online. You can do it on the phone. It's old school.
it's just like talking to neighbors, frankly, is what it is. And made possible when you call 1-800-866-1475. And I mentioned before, but when you donate right now, a gift of any amount, you'll be entered to win one of five round-trip ferry passes from Bar Harbor to Yarmouth, Nova Scotia, courtesy of Bay Ferries, operators of the Cat Ferry. Each pass is good for a vehicle carrying two people and is good through October 15th of this year. So you'll have all summer to use it. This is an incredible opportunity to do something great for your station and potentially win this fantastic trip. So give us a call, 1-800-866-1475. A gift of any amount will support us, and you'll be entered to win that fantastic prize. Again, thanks to Bay Ferries.
And if available for your donation of $15 a month or $180 a year, Maine Public Radio is reaching more of Maine than ever with more signals, three more signals. So we've got a T-shirt for those of you who call in at that pledge level. It's the Signal T-shirt, blue, and it's a features all of Maine Public Radio and classical frequencies, which are a mouthful now.
It certainly is, and you'll share that mouthful in a minute. But I already saw some folks call in. I saw Debbie White from Bethel, Maine, is where I grew up in that area. Thank you, Debbie, for calling in. That's one of our new Maine Public Radio signals in Bethel. But we've got other classical signals in the county and in the center of Maine and in the down east. All made possible with your support at 1-800-866-1475.